G'day, and welcome to episode 117 of the Pack of You podcast. My name is Hayden Thompson, and today partners Brian Chin and Jade McConnell join me on the show to discuss the business that they're operating in Port Coquitlam, BC, called Morgan's Harbour. Now, in this episode, we dive into the inception of Morgan's Harbour and the journey that led Brian to taking over the reins of the family business. We also discuss the challenges and opportunities that come with running a business, including managing production, navigating the pandemic, staying competitive in a crowded market, and adapting to industry changes. We take a trip down memory lane to Jade's early days of sales and how their sales and marketing strategy has evolved over time. Plus, we explore the hiring challenges, training, and importance of creating SOPs in production, which have definitely proven themselves to be essential to maintaining the quality and tradition that make Morgan's Harbour's patties so special. Now, before we kick off into today's conversation with Brian and Jade, if you're new to the podcast, thanks for taking the time to listen in. My name, as I said at the top, is Hayden Thompson. And as well as chatting with business owners and operators on this podcast, I work for a packaging company located in BC called Foodpack, where we help food-based CPG companies and food processors with their packaging and food packaging equipment. Now, I've helped a lot of my guests on this podcast with either stock bags or custom printed films, as well as packaging equipment like Ciprimac vacuum chamber machines, Flexpack band sealers, Repack tray sealers, and Repack thermoformers. Now, we also have a showroom at our Richmond HQ, which you can see everything in action and run your product through for proof of concept or shelf life studies. Plus, we have an in-house tech and service team to ensure that everything runs smoothly out in the wild for our clients. So if you're looking for some new packaging for your food product, or want me to evaluate your current packaging program, head over to the Foodpack website down in the show notes. You can learn a little bit more about what we offer and then reach out to me directly at hayden@thepackofyoupodcast.com and we can take it from there. All right, let's get stuck into it. I hope you all enjoy today's episode 117 with Brian and Jade. Brian, Jade, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
That's a pleasure. I've wanted to have a chat with you guys for a while, so I'm glad we finally made it happen.
For sure.
Yeah, cool. So I have known you guys for a while now. You guys have been buying your bags from us at Foodpack. And so you've always been on my radar. And obviously, just being in the same network of and community that we all work in, you guys are definitely out and about. And I see you out on the retail shelf as well, which is really nice. And I've spent some time on your website and you guys have developed a really beautiful brand, something that's unlike anything else out there. It's sort of got this historical character to it. And, you know, obviously some elements that are true to you individually. And you know, your history. So why don't we start at the very start? Where are you guys from? Where'd you grow up?
Okay, for me, I am actually Jamaican. Believe it or not, a lot of people will come up to me at like the farmers markets where we attend and they'll ask if I'm actually Jamaican. I've lost my accent, but I was born there. We moved to Jamaica, I moved to Canada. 1998. Yep. I was 92, so I moved when I was 6 years old. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I was born there in a little town called Port Royal, where there's like a lot of historical stuff there. There's a whole bunch of buildings from, you know, when they were doing their whole colonizing shtick back in like the 1600s.
So yeah, got ya.
We built our brand name around kind of that time when. Yeah. They kind of introduced a lot of these different foods and stuff from Britain. And yeah. That's actually where the Jamaican patties come from, or the Cornish pasties. So yeah, we can get into that a little bit after. But I'm from Jamaica, born and bred, but kind of a Canadian boy at this point because I've been here most of my life. So
yeah. Longer than Jamaica, for sure. And what about yourself, Jade?
Yeah, I am a Canadian girl. I grew up on a ranch in Alberta, and I moved to the Sunshine Coast, British Columbia, when I was about 10 or 11, and I've just kind of stuck around BC ever since, really.
Yeah, cool. And did you guys study at all? Did you go to university? Like, what's your educational background looking like?
Well, I used to be an optician, a licensed optician.
So oh, wow.
For that. I was an optician for 8 years or something along those lines. And then I just let my license go. I think it must have been May 2020.
Was that a big decision for you?
It was kind of, because yeah. I can always take the national exam again if I really wanted to practice again. But at the same time, it was sort of both feet all in. Business and just kind of like letting that chapter close.
Yeah, because always having sort of that backup plan and it being there, like you may not always be emotionally invested, I can imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So both feet in and you guys are all in now. That's cool.
For sure.
So this is quite a unique situation because very rarely do I speak to someone on the show who has actually like purchased a business or has stepped into a family business that was already operational. And after doing some research on the business, just like obviously reading on your website as well, like this was a family business for quite some time when your uncle Edward Chang started it quite some time ago. So why don't you go right back to the very start of the business as well?
Sure. Yeah. And I guess that starts with us being in Jamaica as well.
Yeah.
They are family on my dad's side of the family. Edward Chang's actually our cousin, but we call him Uncle Ed, right?
So, yeah.
So we were looking to come to Canada, yeah, in 98. And a lot of the times when people immigrate, they either go to somewhere on the East Coast, right? Mm. So either New York or Toronto.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's a huge Jamaican population in Toronto. And
yeah, my sister-in-law is from Jamaica.
Oh, is that right?
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, sweet. That's awesome.
Yeah, it is.
Everyone out east knows what Jamaican pies are, right? So
yeah,
we were kind of looking to go there, but our cousins, they were in Vancouver and they said, come on over to Vancouver because it's a lot warmer. And so we're kind of thankful that we did, because I remember when we were coming to Vancouver, we had like a layover in Toronto and it was like, you know, minus whatever. I never felt anything like that before. And I couldn't believe how people lived here. So
yeah.
It's a little bit of a shock, but kind of thankful that they said to come over to Vancouver. But yeah, they had this business when we arrived in Vancouver. And our uncle at the time, Uncle Ed, he was old when we, you know, ever since we've known him, right? And over the years, he kind of just, you know, he couldn't really take it anymore. And he was aging a little bit. And I don't think any of his, you know, kids that he had wanted to take it on. So he was kind of looking to sell, but wanted to keep it in the family, I believe. And then it kind of got my mom's attention. And then my mom kind of said she thought it was a good idea. And she talked to my dad and they ended up purchasing it with the intention of giving it to her kids. I have two older brothers and a younger sister. And at the time, none of us were really keen to kind of help out, right? Because we're all doing our own thing. But within a year, she kind of had like, she kind of took on too much, right? Because she was doing everything herself. She was still working like a full-time care aide, taking care of the family and everything. So it was a little bit too much for her.
I can only imagine. And,
yeah. And so she was about to sell, but I kind of, right timing, like was looking into business and kind of started to understand what, you know, having your own business could offer. And so I kind of put up my hand and I was like, sure, I'll do it. And so I was like, I'll try. And so my mom gave it to me and then I soon just kind of started doing it by myself. And I didn't know what the heck I was doing. I kind of joke with everyone that like I could make like cereal and scrambled eggs and that was pretty much it. So having something that's really technical as like making like a pastry,
yeah,
essentially what a patty is,
yeah,
the crust, took a lot of learning, but yeah, that's where we started.
That's really cool. Did you have a plan? Like you said, you just sort of jumped in there and put your hand up and sort of had faith in yourself. But like, did you actually write something down and go, this is a bit of a vision that I've got, or was it to sort of just take it on and learn as you go?
The latter.
Okay.
Take it on and see where it goes.
Yeah.
So I guess the only thing that I was going by is that like I kind of, like I said, knew what business could potentially offer, in the fact that there's a lot of personal development that you get through business, because if you're to create a successful business, you're gonna have to become a person that can lead people, like do multiple things and just kind of wear these different hats. And for me, like I really wasn't doing a whole lot for, like I didn't really have a vision, but you know, I don't know if I was, I don't know what, how to put it, but I just knew that, you know, business could work on me you know, as a person. And so I did that. And I think I was around my early 20s. So
that's huge. Just to have faith in yourself like that and, you know that you're going to try something that you've never done before. Had you actually worked in the business before? Like, was it completely foreign to you?
I mean, a little bit. I mean, yeah. I maybe made a few patties here and there, but nothing. Yeah. Once I actually took the reins and like everything was on me, like you can feel the weight of the business, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. When it's like, you gotta show up, you gotta make the deliveries and everything. So,
yeah. Okay, cool. So who did you bounce ideas off? Like when you first took it over and you're like, holy shit, I've got to sort of, you know, manage my cost of ingredients. I've got to get out there and hustle. I'm assuming you already had somewhat of a book of business out there. So like people that you're already selling to, where did you start and what did you focus on first?
This is funny. It's a good question. I didn't ask anyone. A young guy, didn't really know what the heck I was doing, right? So yeah. The first couple of years, I was just stumbling through everything. So, you know, I appreciate everything my uncle Ed did for us and everything. And yeah, I can't say enough good things, but when he passed us the business, he didn't really give us a whole lot to go.
No operating procedures, no recipes.
Yeah, like the initial recipe that I got was like, you know, there's like a bucket of water and like we have these like little buckets in the shop and he's like, fill it to about this much, right? And it wasn't even like weight or anything. And so for me, like following the recipe and I tried to make it once. And like the thing is with their facility, it's a pretty old building. And the thing with dough and like pastry making is there's so many different factors that come into play that, well, if you want to get it consistent, right, you're talking about temperature, how long the dough is setting, how long you're mixing it and all this stuff. So I tried to work off the recipe, but then it would turn out a certain way because like it was summer. And then as winter came around, it would be a whole different thing. And just as I was kind of getting the hang of it, it would kind of switch on me. And I was like making these horrible looking patties. And so it took me a couple of years to figure out like, okay, I need to start putting a thermometer in it and kind of like writing down notes. So it was just like a crash course and maybe going on YouTube videos, trying to see what I could get, but it's just pretty much a scientific process at the end of the day, right? So I had to teach myself some basic science theory, I think.
I did see that you studied marine biology, so there is an element of science in you as well.
Sure.
Yeah,
my dad was a marine biologist in Jamaica, and cool. I hesitate to say that I was going into marine biology because I only did it because like my parents wanted us to go to school and stuff, and I was kind of just appeasing them. So I was like, okay, go to college, you're going to do what you did, Dad, or whatever. But at the end of the day, like I didn't really like fish. So I don't know. That was probably the a bad thing for me to do. So I was buying time until I could find out what I want to do. And so, I mean, the opportunity of Patty's came up. So, but I do like scientific thinking. So
That's cool. Yeah. So tell me, like the sales side of the business is possibly everything, especially like, you know, you've got a product, it's delicious, it's consistent, and you got to get out there and you got to sell it. So what was your initial process to getting out there and, you know, having conversations with your existing business and expanding on that?
Sure. So initially it was, we had a handful of customers and, I think we were actually regressing as a business because when my uncle wasn't around, like we some of the quality control and stuff kind of went aside. And then when I took over, I didn't know what the heck I was doing. And so it was like we had lost some customers, and it was just kind of once I learned how to make the patties and was confident in what I had, it was trying to reapproach the ones that we had lost and strengthen the relationships that we still had. So it was, I don't know, maybe I don't think I had really had a strategy. If I were to kind of think about it, it would basically be that I just got to know them, right? I just built relationships with them.
Yeah.
And I think I learned how to do business with other people because I hadn't done that before. Right. So just learning, getting comfortable with a business within a business relationship. And then like after, you know, a little time, like I was comfortable knocking on someone else's door, but you know, with Jade, you know, Jade's been on board for a long time. And so I am not that strong in sales. I'm more of an introverted guy. So my deal is kind of in the shop, but Jade is our business development person. So she's the one that is hitting the road these days. So maybe she can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's cool because I've had a conversation with quite a few people, whether their partners are involved in the business or, you know, their spouse. And, you know, obviously that brings some stresses to the relationship at times as well, because business isn't easy and relationships aren't easy. I witnessed my parents working together over the years, and sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't. So obviously, you know, you both bring something unique to the table, and you were just suggesting Jade brings the sales and sort of the front side of the business component. But Jade, like when you first came on board, like, you know, where did you start and sort of how did you discover what your strengths were in the business to sort of define those roles?
Yeah. So, well, Brian and I, we've known each other for a long time. So we kind of already knew that I might be a little bit stronger in that area before we really started working together long-term. But in the beginning, it was just kind of like a list of previous customers. Like Brian had said, that maybe the previous business had lost at the end of its sort of days there. And lots of cold calls, lots of, I remember my first day I went out to do sales for Brian, because that's kind of where we were at that point. I was like, well, I'll take your info and I'll print out some stuff and I'll go see if I can get any business. So I think I just drove to Vancouver. I went to like West Georgia Street and I just like went into every store that seemed like it was selling food and just to talk to people and see what they thought of it. And the feedback that I got was that it was, you know, lots of people were interested. And then after that, it was just sort of like learning how to follow up and learning to sort of narrow that target customer, right? So instead of just blasting everyone and wasting a lot of everybody's time, to just really hone in on like a little bit more of a
specific,
like specific who we're actually trying to sell to, and what stores are more likely to say yes, or what retailers are more likely to say yes.
So
that's kind of where it started. That was my first day. That was my first day doing sales, and it was really just very haphazard, very messy. And then after that, it still took a little bit of time, and we've had a few people come to us and say, hey, I've heard that you do Jamaican patties, and it's a fairly niche thing. So we've been successful with that kind of thing, but there's been a lot of learning. I think we had to really a couple years ago look at our prices and see, you know, maybe let some of our customers go if we raised the price to what was, you know, sustainable for the business. So there's been a lot of lessons, and
Yeah, that's interesting. That trial by fire sort of approach is probably the best way to learn. You know, like you can go to school and you can do your MBA and all of that kind of stuff, and that's awesome, but it's all theoretical and it's all something out of a textbook. But until you actually, you know, hit the road and knock on some doors and get that rejection, like in your face, or, you know, somebody who genuinely wants your product, there's nothing like it. Like, you definitely remember all of those lessons along the way. And, you know, what is your approach now to sales? Like, after everything that you've learned, like, how are you going about it? Are you sampling? Like, what's your strategy?
Yeah, so right now, we have mostly maintained throughout like 2022. We haven't really done too much. I think trade shows and just being where buyers are is really important. And a little bit of the exposure, like through marketing, even through the farmers markets, which is where most people find us for the first time. That's a great way to get a product into somebody's hands and for them to experience something. And they say, where can I get more of these? And just having that customer base already in place allows us to, when we approach new customers, to let them know that we already have an established customer base. So it's easier for them to see that there's proof in the product, I guess.
It gives you some validity. And you relaunched the business as Morgan's Harbor in 2019, is that correct?
That's right.
Yeah.
What was sort of the motivating factor between the name change and the rebrand? Was it to just sort of reestablish yourselves as like your own unique thing and sort of break away from, you know, the past business that you had and sort of take it in your own direction, I'm assuming?
Not quite. Our company is actually still called Hibiscus.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, just a little bit on that. Actually, I learned this a little bit later on that Hibiscus, I think it's Spanish, is pronounced Jamaica. And how you spell that is actually how you write out Jamaica in English.
Oh, right.
So, yeah, we didn't know that, but like it was kind
cool.
of, that's really cool.
Yeah, it is.
But yeah, that's just a little FYI. So the reason we went to Morgan's Harbor is because our company name is Hibiscus Foods, but it's not really like a brand name. There's not really a story behind that. We are still Hibiscus Foods. I want to honor Uncle Ed's legacy. Our business name is still that. And in the future, when we do other products, right, we're still doing that through Hibiscus Foods. But there's a lot more of a story, I think, in the Morgan's Harbor brand. It's an homage to where my family is from, and it's kind of a throwback to when they kind of started making the patties and made the patties with fresh ingredients, as opposed to today when there's a lot of, you know, added junk in the modern day patty. So
cool.
It gives us a little bit more freedom too. So like if we were to add more products, like there's certain ones that we would definitely want to be Morgan's Harbor, and there might be new products that we want to keep, you know, for whatever it is, but just keep it aside and have it under Hibiscus Foods.
Yeah.
Necessarily go under that brand. So
yeah, that's really cool. It does give you some flexibility there. I'm thinking about your business and what makes you unique, because like over the years you've like, and I'm sure like I've definitely seen it and you would have noticed it as well, but the marketplace is becoming ever increasingly competitive, especially in the Jamaican patty world. Mm-hmm. They're cropping up all the time, which is a great thing, but it means that you have to redefine yourself. And the thing that I'm finding that's different with you guys is you have your in-house production, whereas a lot of people will use a co-packer. And, you know, with in-house production, there are pros and cons to that. So you were suggesting back, you know, when you were first learning the business, you know, obviously consistency in the dough for the crust. What else would you suggest would be some pros and cons about in-house production? And what would you recommend to people out there just starting a business?
Yeah, I think it's very dependent on what you're looking to produce, right? So yeah. I can only speak for ourselves, but you know, if you're looking to make a pastry and you're looking to make something that's very high quality, there's certain things that you're gonna have to have, right? Like a temperature controlled environment, right? Mm. So that's something that we didn't have, and the dough was wonky all throughout the year, right? And it wasn't very consistent. There's big things like a consistent oven, right? The quality of your oven is really good. And in fact, we're still growing, right? Like the pain with adopting something that's, you know, we have a lot of old equipment, we're still using the same oven that I inherited, right? And that thing's probably twice our age.
Yeah.
This is kind of a little funny thing that people might notice is that sometimes our patties are looking a little bit darker on some edges than others. It's because our oven is
the consistency of the temperature.
Right.
Yeah,
it's old, right? And so it doesn't heat properly on one side. So that's something that's currently holding us back, right? As opposed to if you're, you know, at a commissary or whatever, like they have everything that's up to standard. So that is kind of a growing pain, is that you're going to have to potentially invest a lot into getting some of these new equipment.
Yeah.
If you're doing everything in-house, and you're going to have to be stuck with what you have at the moment.
Mm. Yeah, I can imagine. And obviously, you know, the capital investment of building out your own facility and making sure that you're able to pass all of the health inspections and so on as well. Do you guys like have all of your operating procedures like written down? Are you at a point where, you know, you've got people coming in and assisting you, or is it just the two of you at the moment? How many employees do you have?
Well, we have two employees in production.
Yeah.
And then we have a small like farmers market team as well. We usually have some seasonal workers during the summer. Mm. So yeah. Right now we're just, I think, six people.
Yeah. 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 Hiring's always a bit of a challenge. Have you guys found that too?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Hiring, yeah. What we do now with the hiring, and a little bit to go off on your question, but have we written things down?
Yeah.
So we have learned that we have to write things down.
So critical, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, for the training process. But then also when we bring people in, even if they interview really well over Zoom or whatever,
yep.
we always do this thing where we say, we just want to make sure that everybody's clear on what this job actually entails, that you're comfortable, we're comfortable, and you can read a job description, but sometimes you think you're going to be able to do it. And it's yep. a pretty physical job. We work in a bakery, right? So yep. it's not for everybody. So what we do is we get people to come in just for like 2 hours and we put them in production, have them do a couple little tasks. And at the end, we do a little meeting and just say, how did that go for everybody? And then we kind of either move forward or don't from that.
Yeah. 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 We used to do the same thing in one of the cafes that I managed. We'd just have a trial shift.
Yeah.
We'd get somebody in for an hour. Pay them cash in hand. And like, was that for you? Can you see yourself doing that? And it'd give us a really good opportunity to see how they would hustle. How did they work with their hands? How was their attitude? It's amazing how much you can learn in an hour of watching somebody. Hey.
Yeah. Yeah.
For sure.
I grew up in my parents' business and which was hospitality as well. They had a fast food outlet in a shopping court. So I started working there when I was the age of 12 in the dish pit, and I graduated onto the grill, and then I was out the front. And it was so funny. Like, we would hire people, and you know what? It's funny, but it's kind of like, I don't know what you would say it is. It's kind of, I don't know whether it's sad or whether it's just a state of like where we are at the moment, but some people, you'd give them a broom and they wouldn't even know how to hold a broom or hold a mop, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just some people have got it and some people don't. And yeah, I don't know. It's funny. You pick up on these things pretty quickly, whether somebody's going to hack it or not. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The spatial awareness, the muscle mind connection. Yeah. Like it's so, like you said, funny. It's so weird how some people are just like built and they're just aware of their bodies and how to maneuver in space, and other people just aren't.
Yeah.
Or they might, but they just don't have that urgency vibe. They don't
no
have
hustle. Yeah, some people don't hustle.
They could be going as fast as they can possibly be going and still not going fast.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I know. And yeah, you're right. Like, coordination is so important, like in hospitality. Like, are you coordinated to like pick up a bucket of something and pour it and not splash it everywhere and make a big mess? It's just like basic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there you go. I'm thinking about other things that would make the biggest impact for you and your business. And obviously, like, marketing is really important and getting, you know, this brand story out there and talking to people and, you know, giving your business exposure. Have you guys sort of leveraged social media, or is it just like farmers markets, or what's your sort of strategy in sort of getting the word out?
That is a great question. we know that we want to do more with marketing, but you know, over the last couple of years, it's only been something that's come onto our radar within the last few years, I want to say.
Yeah.
And trying to navigate the pandemic, we did do a few marketing initiatives that were successful. We had a kind of a cap where we were like, we need to be really strategic with the funds that we have, and maybe we should be allocating this to something else at the moment. So it's been a real fine line that we've been walking, trying to do what we can here and there. But I think we do definitely want to have a stronger marketing strategy and get better in that department. It's just been something that when you're spread so thin and constantly pivoting, it's just it wasn't really anything that we got any traction with.
Yeah. So, yeah, it sounds to me like the pandemic really impacted you guys, hey?
Yeah, there was just like a lot of like things that we ended up changing and then changing back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the pandemic, I mean, it's obviously something that is no one expected, right? So
totally out of our control.
We were trying to navigate it and trying to predict and to, you know, like, okay, so what's going to come next? And so we'd make a whole bunch of stuff in response to what's currently happening in the market. And then, you know, because during the pandemic, no one knew how long it was going to be. So
it's going to be 6 weeks at first, wasn't it? 6 weeks shutdown. Exactly,
right? So then we're like, okay, it's going to be here to stay. And so we've made a whole bunch of major changes. And then, you know, the next season comes around and it's like, okay, it's back to normal. And so we were kind of on the back end of that, and we didn't really get on top of it. And so we kind of got screwed over a little bit during the pandemic, because we just didn't, we probably just didn't make those decisions like fast enough.
Quick enough. Yeah. I think we ended up getting there, but yeah, we took our time sort of like muddling through and reacting. But also I think that took up a lot of our brain space, and some of the things that we had plans for all of a sudden, you know, that
evaporated.
Changed. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There are so many businesses that didn't make it through, and here you guys are, and you're still here. What were the fundamental things that, well, what was the difference? Like, you know, what were the fundamental things that you focused on that allowed you the opportunity to still be here and operating today?
I think, just do what we can do, I guess, right? So like pre-pandemic, there's like a big effort to be in like an expansion mode, right? So where Jade is out there doing sales, and the nature of sales, you don't really know if you're going to get a bite, and it's a lot of, you know, work that is not necessarily producing, right? So when the pandemic hit, it's kind of like, let's kind of let's huddle, let's kind
slow
of
slow down
more of on the defensive, and just kind of focus on what we can do, because we weren't getting a whole lot of, you know, help, obviously, like hiring. It was hard to find folks and whatever, so we kind of had to just consolidate our operation. And you know, if there was, you know, potentially some markets that weren't working for us, like we needed to kind of snip some things, right? There's some customers that weren't working, because we needed to raise our price, because, you know, our overhead's going up at the same time. We're just gonna have to make some snips. So we consolidated our efforts to maximize kind of our, what we can produce, because we can, you know, only count on us at the end of the day if all of our staff end up leaving because of the pandemic. So it was just kind of bringing everything in.
Just slowing everything down and being really precise and, you know, taking your time on decisions.
And in terms of sales and just really trying to read our customers' behaviors a little bit more. So we did make some changes, and I think we were a bit slow in it, but we still ended up getting to make those changes. And so really just reading the sales data and just saying, okay, people are buying more of this. Like, let's produce more of that right now.
Yeah.
And that's, I think that's something that we've brought with us now that we're kind of coming out of the pandemic, is really just sort of tracking what's happening in terms of like sales and listening to customers and that kind of thing.
Yeah. What's your approach? Is it like you guys are building par levels and stocking your shelves in production kind of thing, or the fridge or the freezer, and then you're pulling as your POs come in, or are you making it to order?
No, that it's the former. So we're stocking our freezer, right?
Yeah,
so,
cool.
We have a holding freezer, and we try to keep it as, you know, we predict, you know, what we're going to do for wholesale, what we're going to sell at the markets, and retail folks that want to come pick up. So we try to keep our freezer stocked. And the trick around that is just managing the efficiency, right? Like how many patties can you produce on one day, right?
Yeah.
And try to just maximize
your
output in a given day, and hopefully you don't run out. But I mean, just for instance, last week we actually did run out because we had a holiday, right? And so we missed a day of production there. And you know, we end up having a pretty good sales week. And so there's
That's
definitely
great.
Weeks when we are, you know, kind of backlogged. And my sister, who helps out, actually, she's usually in production, but she's gone for a month. She's over in Hong Kong, luckier.
Cool. Yeah.
But we've just kind of been working and just trying to do what we can. But there's times when we got to short some customers. We don't really bring as much at the markets, but we try and keep on top of it.
Yeah, that's cool. Are there any particular components of the business that you've outsourced? Because it sounds to me like you guys have got your hands full in both production, sales, you're taking on marketing component of the business, you're doing the hiring, you're doing the training, you guys are doing it all. Have you outsourced anything like the book work, or what are you guys sort of focused on most?
The book work is a funny question, because we tried to outsource that.
Yeah.
We've tried to outsource that a couple times now. At one point we got a virtual assistant, and that was going okay, but I think ended up that person didn't have the proper background to take on that kind of thing, so it ended up taking more of my time instead of alleviating some of my stress. But yeah, so we have the bookkeeping, I think, and accounting is something that we definitely want to outsource. Yeah. We want to be able to know what's going on, but in terms of like data entry and stuff like that,
paying invoices,
someone else can do it. For sure.
Yeah, for sure. If there are any bookkeepers out there, I think you should scroll on down into the show notes and reach out to these guys.
Nice.
No worries. Okay, so you've been operating the business for a while. I feel as if we've covered a bit of ground, but are there any particular challenges or memorable sort of moments throughout the development of the business since you've taken it on? Or any forks in the road where you've had to fundamentally change or improve on something that, you know, there are some lessons that can be learned out there for everybody listening?
Yeah, actually. And I think it's funny, like been at this now 10 years, but I'm only just learning this now. But I won't mention his name exactly, but there used to be a French baker in the same complex that we're at. And I don't know how he does it, but he was in his like late 50s or whatever. And he started his business and now he's like, he's got a huge production facility, you know, making whole bunch of bread. Like you'll find them at mostly all the grocery stores that are here. But maybe about 4 years in, I kind of went over there and I worked part-time to actually see. So that was one of the things that like I knew I had to find out how other people were doing it. So he was building a rocking business. So I was like, maybe I can learn a few things. So I worked part-time, like on a Sunday, like meanwhile doing like the patties and everything, but I worked there on a Sunday just to see if I could learn a thing or two. And he was just working a lot, right? Like, and I don't know how he did it, but like he was, you know, working like 20-hour days, like he'd be like just really crazy. And so the lesson I learned from there was that I need to do the same thing. If I want to build a business, I got to work these crazy hours. And that's kind of what I did, right? Like, so when we first started in the farmers markets, we took on a lot. We probably tried to do as many farmers markets as we could. I was at some points, you know, baking patties till 2 o'clock in the morning, and then like having them freeze and like barely getting them frozen and like jamming them in the freezer, putting them in the truck, and like just going out to the market, still like flour all over me and stuff. And I mean, young at the time, and I was trying to do that. And just over the years, it was like, this kind of isn't working, right? And I was like, it's just gonna get better. Like it'll grow on you or whatever. But I, at the end of the day, like I was getting stressed, I was getting anxious and all of these bad things that were happening because I was overworking too much. And so the new lesson we've learned is that we've been taking care of ourselves despite what's happening in the business. We've kind of prioritized our health. And so we're working now. We're working a lot still, but we're going home at a decent time. Mm-hmm. If that means that customers aren't going to get their patties, then so be it. We'll push, or we'll just give them a little bit less than they were expecting. But we're taking care of ourselves now, and the funny thing is that once we do that, we're actually producing more, right?
Yeah, you've got more energy.
Yeah. And so I don't know, he had something else, like I don't know, like his mental strength is just really quite good, and I admire him a lot for that, but it's not something that I think I can do quite yet. But prioritizing our health is definitely been,
that's so good that you guys landed in that space. Like, I think it's okay to do those crazy hours and roll up your sleeves and get it done in short little sprints, you know, if it's required, but it's not a long-term strategy. Like, unless you've got your health, you don't have anything, you know, because why are you working? You're working to like build a beautiful life for yourselves. And if you burn yourselves out and you build a heart problem or, you know, something like that, like you've got nothing at the end of the day to enjoy. So you guys have got a van now?
Yeah, we've got two vans. We've got one really old, like, custom reefer thing that's
awesome,
a bit of a monster. Yeah. And then we've got a nice, new, beautiful one, which I like to drive. I like to drive that one.
That's cool. Is that the one you guys take camping, or you took up to Whistler a couple of months ago?
You know what we did? We didn't do that long trip that we told you about.
Yeah, yeah.
We ended up just doing a short trip, a little bit before. But
yeah, nice.
We ended up going to Mexico instead of taking the van.
Oh, good for you. Yeah, yeah, nice.
We realized that if we're going to spend money for new winter tires to make sure that we are safe, that we might as well spend it on a cheap flight and go somewhere where the sun is. So that's what we did.
I don't blame you. That's awesome. Did you stay at an all-inclusive or where did you guys get to?
Yeah, we stayed at a hostel cool. in Puerto Vallarta.
Man.
So yeah, we wanted a little bit more of I don't know, not a crazy vacation type trip, which is why we were thinking of going up in the van to Whistler.
Yeah.
So we wanted something kind of similar. So yeah, we stayed in a hostel and we just kind of did just everyday things while we were down there. It was really nice.
That is nice.
Sunshine.
Yeah, I don't blame you at all. How was the food?
Some of it was amazing.
Yeah, I've heard.
Yeah.
And
some of it was a tourist trap. And okay. It wasn't that good, but the rest of it, we found this wonderful place where there was like lineups of locals and we ate there, I think, four times while
That's
we were
so
down
cool.
there.
Yeah. I've never been to Mexico, but I've heard lots of good things about it. And I definitely plan on getting there with my family at some stage in the future. But one thing I will say is I have stayed in a few hostels in my time. Like when I first came to Canada, I traveled overseas by myself and I landed on Granville Street at the Same Sun Hostel or the Backpackers there. Okay. Some of the funnest nights of my life and I'll never forget it. So yeah, a hostel is definitely on the cards one day in the future, but now that we've got kids, maybe not so much. But that would have been fun. But yeah, it's always when I travel and, you know, you step away from your everyday life that you can get re-inspired, you get re-energized, you see something in another business, like that place where you'd go, like the local place, and you see something, you're like, oh, that's something that I could potentially incorporate into my business. Or was there anything that sort of reignited something in you to bring back into the business now?
Oh, for sure. I'll let Brian take this one.
Oh?
Yeah.
Why?
Oh, well, the hostel was above a vegan ramen shop.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And so because some of the workers there also were staying in the hostel, we got to talking to them and got to talking to them about what they use in their vegan recipes, because a lot of it was like really good.
Yeah.
And a lot of them were vegan. And so we obviously have a vegan product, but we only have one. And so we got some pretty good ideas for creating another version of a vegan patty or, you know, a different flavor profile. And that
nice.
Yeah.
That's cool. One question I did have for you guys was like innovation for the future. Like, and so this kind of ties in nicely, but sort of what direction are you taking the business and sort of what future products do you sort of see yourselves sort of moving into and so on?
Yeah, I don't want to spoil too much, but at some point we'd like to do other Jamaican food, right?
So yeah, cool.
That's kind of where Hibiscus Foods comes into play, but there's an opportunity to do a lot with, you know, different Caribbean type stuff, right?
Yep. So
whether that be a retail location or even some sort of like food service where we're making paid meals and delivering them to people's homes individually.
Yeah.
So there's a few different ways we can go and that we're kind of working on these ideas right now while things are slow. But we've learned our lessons through COVID, not to get too gung-ho about something because we know how messy that can get. So we're being pretty cautious in how we kind of move forward. But we have some good ideas about what we want to do. But we're being responsible, I think.
Good for you. A question that I always like asking, especially when you've been in business for a while, is this one. So if you had the opportunity to go back to before you started with the knowledge that you have now, what business advice would you give yourself?
Well, dang, you're going to have to give me a sec. I think I already answered that one.
Yeah.
Right? Don't work as hard.
Don't burn yourself out.
Don't burn yourself out. But let's see if I can get another one.
I think mine would be like find out what activities will bring you the most value, like return on investment for your time. So I think that went for us in the beginning years with training in particular, we were doing a lot of verbal training and a lot of, just hoping people got it, what we were trying to say. So I think we've really worked on our communication and worked on having systems in place. Mm-hmm. And so I would say, like, create a system so that you're not the one that people turn to. They turn to the system. Because you are going to save yourself so much time and so much hassle and so much emotional energy dealing with people, because you know, people, as lovely as they are, they take your brain space and they take your emotional energy as well, so that they can turn to a system and just know what they need to do if X comes up, and instead of you always being the one to answer all the questions.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, once you've got somebody trained up and, like you said, they can comfortably rely on the policies and procedures and protocols that you've put in place, that means you can go on a holiday more often knowing that the business is going to keep on operating and you don't have to stress that your quality is going to decrease or, you know, somebody's going to be completely making the pastry different.
Yeah, for sure.
That's correct.
If we were to fast forward a year from now and you could say to me that you'd had your best year ever, what is it specifically that you would have accomplished?
Wow. I think we're getting a new project on the go, right? So we've had something, maybe two things, right? So we've got a new project going. We have new products, a new revenue stream.
Yeah.
And maybe we're doing a few more events, right? Because the pandemic is over right now, and we do have all the resources and equipment to be attending some events. So fingers crossed we get into a few, and we kind of focus more a little bit on the retail aspect.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Were you guys at the From the Ground Up trade show that Andrea Gray Grant puts on every now and then, or annually? You were at that last year?
Yeah, that's right.
I can't remember seeing, like, there was something that told me you were there, but I don't know if I stopped by your booth. Did I stop by and say hello? I hope I did.
I think that's where this podcast came from.
Yeah.
Actually.
Yeah, I think that was something. Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah. And have you guys ever been to the CHFA? Is that ever going to be on the agenda, do you think? Like, is that something you aspire to?
Say again.
The CHFA, the Canadian Health Food Association. Have you guys ever aspired to get to that trade show in the future?
Well, you go ahead.
Yes. Yes and no.
Yeah.
So I for us, like, we're not sure how far along, like, the, like, natural foods route that we want to go.
Yeah.
And so that's a conversation that we're kind of having right now, is like, right now we have a lot of, like, really natural ingredients and stuff. Like, do we want to push it further, or do we want to stay where we're at, and where do we want to go with that?
Stay true to your roots. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's tough, because there's a fine line for, you know, if we do this, if we raise our prices, are we going to, you know, what's the ramifications of that?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
All of those things come into play. So we would like to go to, like, one of those, you know, really big trade shows, the ones that are really well known.
Yeah.
For sure. Yes. But not maybe necessarily as, like, you know, like a completely natural product.
Yeah. Yeah. Understood. Yeah. It's got to be the right fit. Like, it, you know, it's like any product market fit, it has to make sense for you and for your business. And even, you know, what I recommend doing is walking that trade room floor. Like, I walk away from a day of walking the floor, just like I said, it's just like travel. Like, you get re-inspired, you see where the market's at, what other people are doing, and you can take a little bit of this and a little bit of that and incorporate it into your business as well. And so that's what I love about it. And obviously, yeah, I've been there quite a few times, you know, whether it was with Salt Spring Coffee that I used to work for, we would always have a stall set up, and it's just awesome sort of mingling and networking and stuff like that. And then I've been before representing myself with this podcast. I'm going again this year, so I'm really looking forward to it. But yeah, I recommend just walking the floor. Like, if you're not going to put a booth up, just walk the floor. It's so much fun. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like a really good time, actually.
Would you recommend us putting a booth up? You think it'd be good for us?
Strategically, I'm not too sure. Like, it has to be something that works for you and for the business. Like, if you guys are looking to move into the retail space and, you know, develop relationships with retailers and with distributors, yeah, absolutely. But, you know, like you guys were saying, you have to have the business model squared away, ready to grow in that respect, and make sure you've got the capability to, you know, increase your you know, capacity and output and marketing spend and so on. So you can't put the horse before the cart, or the cart before the horse, as they say. But strategically, maybe it might be something that you will be looking at in the future, or it may not, and that's totally cool too. Everybody takes their business in their own unique way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, I think for us, we have, I think we've learned that lesson where like you don't want to take, and just because you go to a trade show, can you back it up?
Yeah.
And are you ready to back it up with the, you know, following through?
So, 100%. Like some people will land a really big account and they're like, holy shit, it's going to break us because we don't have the capability to even fulfill a PO, you know, so it's not a good thing. Like, you know, when they think it's a good thing, when that buyer knocks on their door, but it's like, maybe not now, but maybe one day in the future, you know. I've spoken to a few people like that, but either way, you know, everybody, as you were saying, has got their own unique journey for their business. And I love the journey that you guys are on. It sounds like you're working at the pace that you guys are comfortable with and, you know, realizing that your health and, you know, ensuring that you've got a work-life balance is important. And it's something you guys have taken on, and yet you're still operating the business and you guys are still here after the pandemic and you guys have got a real clear vision for the future. I think that's really exciting. So congratulations.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, no worries. So if anybody wanted to get in touch and learn a little bit more about the business or ask you any questions from today's episode, what's the best way for them to go about it?
I would say email. It's probably the best way. So it's info@morgansharbor.ca.
Awesome.
That is where all inquiries come. So
perfect.
Well, visit the website as well. There's a lot of good info on there. Learn a little bit more about the background and everything, what goes into the patty. So visit us there and shoot us an email.
Yeah, definitely. I recommend the spicy beef Jamaican patty. It's what I bought from you guys the other day, and it is really spicy. There's no doubt about it. I love spice. And I was like, whoo. So yeah, it was delicious though. Really, really nice. And I'm assuming, because I always like to try things that like I know will be authentic. If you were to rate the authenticity level on your Jamaican patties, would it be a 10? Is it just like what you get if you went to Jamaica?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing with the authenticity part, because the thing with going to Jamaica is that quick story.
Yeah.
2014, Jade and I went down to do some, you know, market research.
Yeah.
Let's call it. Yeah. We're eating a whole bunch
eating
of
a lot. You know, different
cool. Things. That would have been awesome.
When I was a kid, the number one patty place in Jamaica is called Tasty, and it's essentially like McDonald's.
Cool.
Right? Like there's a Jamaican patty shop on every corner. So Tasty is the king. And went down 2014. So what is that? 12. A few years. I don't know. I've been very bad.
A while away. Yeah.
I hadn't been there for a long time. So we went down, and what had happened, there was two new people on the scene, two new companies on the scene. And so Jamaica is not a very rich country. So it's a third world country. And so a lot of the food there is, you know, how can we make it as cheap as possible?
Like street food.
Exactly. Right. So that's essentially what a Jamaican patty is. And so there is, I think there's a competition to see who could get the cheapest price. And the patty that I ate down there from Tasty wasn't quite as good as it was from when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I think there was a little bit more, you know, filler, there's stretching, you know, a little bit more. And at this point in time, like the patties are, I got to let people know it. The patties are something that are really hard to make, right? Mm. There is kind of like this state of mind or whatever that people think that a patty should be super cheap. But if you look at the actual how to make it, you're pretty much making a croissant to begin with, right? And then you're making a filling, and then you're putting it all together into a pie, and you're we're doing it all by hand. It is a super complex thing to
time consuming too. Yeah.
One piece of patty, right? So, I think we're trying to change that train of thought, which is that the patties should be like a gourmet food, right? Mm-hmm. They shouldn't be thought of as something that's cheap. So back to Jamaica is that they're running these things through big production lines, and they're putting, you know, food coloring and all of this other stuff. And it's kind of like a Frankenstein product. Now even out in Toronto and stuff, like
big
companies, and there's a whole bunch of added crap to it. So Yeah, it's an interesting question that you just asked, because it authentic to which part, right? Because I'm trying to do something that's a little bit before where they started adding, all these other additives and stuff like that. So I'm trying to bring it back to maybe those first Jamaican patties. Started using the spices locally, the Scotch bonnet peppers, the thyme, the pimento, and all that stuff. So we're trying to bring it back and kind of elevate it and try and make it better, really. So yeah.
Well, you
I'm
guys are knocking
curious.
it out of the park.
Oh, thank you. We can. Here's another thing. The patties can still get better, right? Like I'm not satisfied with them. I think they're good, but they're not like the best patties. We're trying to make the best damn patties on the planet, right? And so I think we actually are set up well to do it here in BC, because a lot of people are conscious about what they put in their bodies. And I think people are willing to kind of pay for that as well. So we're kind of lucky to be in an environment where we can use the best ingredients possible. And I think Canada does have a lot of good ingredients that Jamaica doesn't have. Jamaica has a lot of the spices, the peppers, right? There's one thing that we do import is the Scotch bonnet peppers, because although they grow here, you're not going to get that same flavor as the ones in Jamaica. But we have a lot of good stuff here in Canada that we use, like flour and the meat products that are here are outstanding. So yeah, there's potential to make the best patties right here.
Keep at it, mate. You guys are doing a great job. And yeah, like I said, when I was doing my research on your business, everything that you would want to know about the business is on the website, and talking about the ingredients is obviously a key pillar of your website too. So yeah, congratulations, guys. And thank you so much for your time today. I really enjoyed listening about the business and, all of the trials and tribulations of the operation of the business that you've had over the years and where you guys have managed to get to today. So congratulations.
It was a blast. Thanks for having us.
You're
Yeah,
welcome.
awesome. Thanks, Hayden.
All right, take care. Bye.
Bye now.
Okay. Thanks for tuning in to episode 117 with Brian and Jade from Morgan's Harbour. Now, if you have any questions or comments from today's episode, please head on down to the show notes and click on my LinkedIn profile, where I will post up each week's episode. So everything you can be found down there. And yeah, that's it. So thanks again for listening in today, and I hope you join me back here next week with another great episode. Cheers.